This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Growing fruits and vegetables can be hard work. Just ask any farmer or serious gardener. Disease, insects, or weather can wipe out all that work. But most farmers and gardeners will also tell you that the rewards far outweigh the efforts, and they're not just limited to the harvest. Joining us to talk about why people are becoming avid gardeners or turning to farming as a career, and to answer your gardening questions, our Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent, Sarah Stoles, co-owner of Home Meadows Song Farm and director of the Community Garden Program at Turner Farm, Peter Hottinger, and Boone County Cooperative Extension Horticulture Extension Agent, David Kester. And you can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Peter, Sarah, and David, thank you so much for being here this afternoon.
Good to be here.
Yeah, good afternoon.
Peter, you know, it's true, farming, if you're a serious gardener, if you do this as a career, it really is a lot of work. So, and it takes some knowledge, too.
Right.
So why do people step it up a notch? Why do they sometimes even make it a career?
Well, I think that one of the things is people see it as an independent lifestyle. So most farmers are really working for themselves, and that attracts people. But I think a lot of people just aren't cut out to work inside, work in a, you know, in a corporate setting or in any kind of business setting where they're indoors all the time. They like that relationship with the outdoors and nature. And it's an interesting career because there's nothing artificial about it. You know, you're completely tethered to the weather and weather patterns, and you have to plan your crops, your harvest, your marketing around the weather and the natural elements of the outdoor world. And I think that some people just really connect with that.
Yeah. Sarah, what are your thoughts on that? Why do a lot of people turn to this and become avid gardeners or even make it a profession?
Yeah, well, why I'm here today as a horticulturalist is it started out as a therapy for me. You know, I was at the University of Kentucky studying and started volunteering at the Arboretum, and my supervisor at the time said, you know, why don't you talk to the horticulture advisory professor? And I said, what? And so I started horticulture, not only volunteering, but then got a job there at the Arboretum and then started studying and just fell in love with it. So to me, it's very therapeutic. You know, it's somewhat instant gratification. You weed and then a bed's cleaner. You know, you pull out things and you add new things. Or when you know, it's a nurturing, you know, aspect too. You start plants from seed and you take care of them and then you watch them grow and then you harvest from that. So it's very rewarding as well. And, you know, all ages can get involved with gardening at some level, container gardening, you know, all the way to large acreage. So anyone can be out there, family, friends, and it's a very awesome way for people to come together as well and then share dinner or lunch around a table. So it's very rewarding.
So is there such a thing as horticultural therapy?
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. In fact, we have horticulture therapy programs at our office, and one of the technicians at the office, she has her certificate of horticulture therapy from the Chicago Botanic Garden. So they offer that program. It's very intense, and she traveled there and had assignments and classwork and things like that. So it's very, you know, it's very rewarding.
Yeah. Down at the east end at the Turner Farm Community Garden down there, last year we worked almost every week with individuals from the Veterans Hospital that came down as part of a recovery program, and it was very beneficial. We worked just a few times with them this year, and we're hoping to get the program started back up again for 2017. But it was really interesting working with these folks. They came down with a therapist and an occupational therapist also. So we weren't acting as therapists, we were just down there gardening with them. But as you're sitting there working sort of shoulder to shoulder and people just start talking and they open up and they share experiences, it's really fascinating. And then when we introduced, we would do cook some things from the garden right there on little camp stoves. And so they would actually harvest and cut up and clean, and then we would cook the things. And that spurred all kinds of conversation about family recipes, or there were a number of people that were actually worked as cooks professionally before in the military, and it just made all these interpersonal connections that were just amazing.
And we're going to talk more about the therapeutic value of gardening and farming on next month's show. Mm-hmm. So why don't we give too much away, but okay. I want to promote the fact that we will be talking about that more next month. So, David, from your perspective, what are the benefits you see of doing this as more of a career or more of a serious type of hobby?
Well, it used to be when I was in college, that you had to have about a 75-acre farm, and that's the average size of the farm in Kentucky. And the wonderful thing about horticulture is, and what we've seen recently, is that people can make a living from 2 to 3 acres. And if they manage it properly, you don't have to have the large equipment inputs, and you don't have to have the large land inputs. And if you just have 2 to 3 of the right acres, and you can really make a decent living from that. It's tough work, no doubt about it. But that, I think, is very exciting.
So what do you need if you want to step it up a notch, whether you want to become a more serious gardener or whether you want to become a farmer? I mean, what do you need to do?
Well, you're going to need the land resource. You're going to need irrigation. We really push that to everybody who decides to get into it. If you don't have irrigation or access to water, you're kind of out of luck. So you've got to have those things. And then most importantly, find your markets and do that before you've got a crop in the ground. You really need to, I don't know how many times over the years I'll get a call from somebody and they'll tell me, I've got an acre of cantaloupe that will be ready next week. What am I going to do with them? And, at that point, it's kind of late to be thinking about that. You need to do that before they're in the ground.
Is the equipment expense something that typically stops a lot of folks from
doing this? But again, I think Peter will tell you, too, that there's a lot of new equipment that we're getting out of Europe and smaller machines, BCS tractors that are walk-behind units. And a lot of things can be adapted and made smaller, and they're just as sometimes you can put various implements on this one machine, and it'll do multiple tasks for you.
How much has technology made this an easier thing for people to do?
Yeah, it's very interesting, especially monitoring, your disease pressure, insect pressure, irrigation. A lot of things you can monitor online. You can set off your irrigation online. So you could be sipping coffee, tea inside and 90-degree day morning and hit off your irrigation. Tractors, I know, can do that as well. So, there are technologies and educational components that, are available via your smart device.
Yeah, and also for small growers, there are some other ways that technology has come into play is that in terms of distribution and broadening your markets, there's an organization in the area called Ohio Valley Food Connection, and where you kind of register on there and you can post online what crops you have available, then restaurants as well as individual families can make those orders, and then there's a centralized place where you can drop those your crops off, and then they take care of distributing it. And so that's a technical innovation right now that I think is really helping people, and particularly small growers from having an acre to 5 acres where they're also doing 1 or 2 farmers markets a week. There's still certain times when they'll have surpluses. And so that gives them a sort of a wholesale market to use without compromising their retail avenues.
So what's your advice to people who want to step it up a notch?
Well, get training. Yeah. And get experience. There's a number of ways. Like Cincinnati State now has a horticultural program. People that are in high school, there's the Diamond Oaks Network of Vocational Education has a horticulture program. There are training employee opportunities as part of the union co-ops, Our Harvest. And there's a really great opportunity for education for people who want to go into farming. There's a 7-month apprenticeship program at Turner Farm, which is paid. And so that costs you nothing. You make a little money. And then there's a 2-year veteran program for veterans at Turner Farm that's also a paid internship program so people get training. But any kind of internship program, whether it's paid or not, before you purchase land and buy equipment, try and get a year of practical, at least a year or two of practical experience in before you make that commitment so you really make sure it's the right mix, right fit for you.
And what about the extension offices? What kind of
exactly.
got a lot of resources too, right?
Well, Mark, remember about a month or so ago, we mentioned about that market ready or that homesteading program. Mm-hmm. Well, we finished that and 107 individuals completed that. So it's pretty awesome. Even some folks here in Ohio, and we thank you for the radio station for sending those people our way. But what came out of that are these people are ready to go and they want to develop focus groups and other resources that they want to create themselves with the support of Extension. So we are here to help those individuals then prioritize and identify, okay, what are you needing now? You want information on agriculture economics? Well, we'll bring in our specialists from the University of Kentucky, and we will help you write that business plan. We will seek out, you know, resources and funds for you to help supplement some of those. So this is the wonderful starting point and, you know, in hopes to diversify our farmers markets. Or this is just an opportunity for our homesteading individuals and farmers and gardeners to offset some of those costs for their family.
We also have, this is, Mark, this is the time of year when you get into January that you get into the conference season, I call it, because there's just a number of conferences coming up. In Lexington, there's going to be the Southern Sustainable Working Group. That's an excellent conference for people who are looking at more of the organic side of it. They bring in people from the kind of the Southeast and Midwest, and they talk it's a three-day conference. The Kentucky Fruit and Vegetable Society, and if you're strictly an organic grower, the Organic Association of Kentucky has a meeting in Shepherdsville, and then OFA, which is the Ohio Organic, their meeting is this year going to be in Dayton, and it's an excellent program. And they, Peter and I and Sarah have all been to that one, and it's just a great opportunity for people. And you can network with some of the other growers in the area.
So this is a good year to be acquiring the knowledge important, like Peter was saying.
And the OFA conference is really a great conference, and it has different tracks. So it's small market gardens as well as people have larger properties as well as livestock and specialty vegetables. But for the home gardener and community gardener, there's also through UK Extension and also at OSU Extension here in Hamilton County, there's the Master Garden programs. And those are really good opportunities for people to learn about home gardening. And then there's a number of different organizations. There's a 500 Gardens in Madisonville. There's a Civic Garden Center's training, has classes, Turner Farm, and Green Acres offer different educational opportunities. So, you know, just cast your net. There's a lot of really great opportunities to learn about gardening.
And we'll continue our conversation and take your phone calls. You can join us at 513-419-7100 with your gardening questions. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Here to answer your gardening questions, Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles, co-owner of Homeadow Song Farm and director of the Community Garden Program at Turner Farm, Peter Huttinger, and Boone County Cooperative Extension Agent David Kester. And you can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. So how satisfying for each of you has it been to build your career around gardening, farming, and agriculture, those kinds of things?
You know, I'm never stuck inside. You know, this is the conference month, the conference season, but it's always very rewarding. You know, you just go outside, you see the birds, you see the insects, you get your hands dirty, and you're helping someone, you're teaching someone. You give someone that first bite of fresh watermelon or whatever it may be, and they put a smile, they have a smile on their face, and it makes me, you know, warm and fuzzy inside. So, you know, I'm never inside all the time. I can never be an office person. You know, I do have those duties to do, but it's just awesome to be outside. Yes, in the cold. Yes, in the rain. But, you know, overall, it's during beautiful days. I love it.
I can't imagine myself doing anything else. As a matter of fact, I was probably one of those people that, you know, if it wasn't for horticulture and going this route, I don't think I would have had nearly as satisfying a life. I think I would have been, you know, made some choices that may not have been what I would have really preferred doing. And so I feel really fortunate.
Yeah, and I think that mixture, I mean, that being able to go outside and being exposed to different weather, I mean, it just has unbelievable health benefits for someone working as a professional in the field, but also for people who are hobbyists. And so yeah, I really can't emphasize that more. But because I'm more involved with the community garden part of it, it's also about the relationships you build with people. And that has been the one thing that I find very enlivening. I mean, it's a very educational process in terms of how can we all get together and work and accomplish something, which is always has some challenges, but in the end is always very fruitful. And also the different types of people that it's exposed me to, from different economic stratas, different cultural backgrounds, gender identification, and most recently working with refugee populations over the last 3 or 4 years has been, really, really encouraging and insightful and educational. It's been really fantastic.
Well, tell us some more, Peter, as far as the interesting gardeners, interesting people that you've worked for, working with refugees. That's a fascinating story, too.
Well, in America right now, there's a lot of, with younger generations and some older folks, too, there's a lot of interest in looking at agriculture and more sustainable, or I like to refer to it as regenerative sorts of techniques. And so permaculture is something that you've had people on the show here in the past and talked about, and these sort of more integrated practices. Well, when you work with folks from different countries, and particularly the refugees I've been working in from Bhutan, who are, have also cultural roots to Nepal, they just that's the way they do their farming and their agriculture. There's a constant layering. They save their own seeds. At the Franciscan Community Garden, it was interesting. When they first started gardening there, some people were concerned that they weren't cleaning up their gardens at the end of the year because they were letting all the mustard greens go to seed, and they thought things were out of control. But it was basically season extension. They were letting these plants go to seed so that they could harvest the seeds both for to eat, but then also to replant. And they also used some really interesting mulching techniques. They would use sticks from the surrounding area and make these elaborate kind of trellises where they would grow squash and melons and different crops on top of these, like two-story kind of situations, and have other crops growing underneath. And at first it looks like chaos, but when you stand back and you watch how it evolves, it's this very sophisticated system they use. It's really fantastic.
513-419-7100. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can also email talk@wvxu.org. Sarah, what about, in your case, in the past year, some interesting people you've run across in your work, or maybe some interesting gardening that you've seen?
Yeah, one of my favorite programs is working with Campbell County Detention Center with their men's work release program. So it's been very fascinating, and I also consider that a horticulture therapy. One gentleman once told me that he hasn't seen or felt sun in 9 months. So just how therapeutic that in and itself, and just being able to be out there and learning, and, we are giving them tools and knowledge of possibly utilizing that for when they are out in the real world. They can use that on a job resume, or hopefully that would have planted a seed for them to maybe, work on a farm, or better yet, go back to school and into agriculture or horticulture. So it's very inspiring on that. And then, of course, with our youth. I work with our youth and educating them on eating your fruits and veggies, but where do they come from? So really kind of stepping back and teaching our youth about where our food comes from. You just don't go to your local grocery store, the farmer's market, and it's just there on the shelf, or you don't get certain pasta sauce in a jar. Where do all those ingredients come from? And we need to appreciate our environment, the water, the air, everything of which we live in. So it's pretty awesome that, again, I'm not only just focusing on one group. It's involving everyone in the county and surrounding Northern Kentucky area.
But do you see more and more young people taking an interest in this?
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah. It's really awesome to see their interest, you know, with insects or bugs or flowers or, you know, it's really interesting that when they grow something, lettuce, we grow lettuce in some of our schools, and they actually want to try it. So, you know, it's really awesome. They get to, you know, they have a little experiment, they measure the growth rate, and, you know, and then at the end, when we harvest, we actually make tacos with it, and then they get really excited, and then some of them put extra lettuce on it, which, you know, when I was a child, I might not have done that. So it's really fun to see when they actually nurture and care for something. I think it sparks a flavor, and they are interested in tasting that. So it's very rewarding. So
David, what about you? Looking back at 2016,
well, you know what I love most is to find the experienced growers, and you know, when I started in Kenton County so many years ago, I went. One of the first things I did was I made a visit to a man who was having some problems with his pepper plants. And I went to the door, and his wife answered the door. And she said, well, just a minute, I'll get my husband. They're his plants. And I heard him say to – or she said to him, it's that young guy from the Extension Service. And I heard him say back to her, well, if he's that young, he couldn't know a whole lot about farming. And, you know, I did not take that as an offense. I think you know, the people and I've lost a lot of those people here lately that, you know, I would go to their farms or their gardens and I'd learn 10 times more from them than I ever was able to give them back. And I think that's, you know, gardening is really, you know, I think the more years you have, the more growing seasons you've been through, the more you really learn.
Oh, it sounds too like networking and mentoring is important too.
Sure.
So.
And also, you know, I work with the veterans in Fort Thomas there at the hospital. And, you know, some of them, I love learning recipes. And I also at one time worked with refugees and just learning different cultures. And again, just learning from each other, you know, how you use kale in a certain way or that you can actually grill lettuce, you know, it's really delicious. So, you know, or different techniques of trellising. So it's pretty interesting.
A lot out there, isn't there, Peter?
Oh, there is.
And very diverse.
And when Dave was talking about, like, some of the older farmers, you know, passing away, and we're losing this knowledge base, I'm glad that there are younger people that are seeking out some of these individuals. Like in Cincinnati, we have a living treasure of Dale Barr and the Barr Farm off of North Bend Road, a 32-acre farm that's been in his family for 100 years this year. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a farm that for 100 years they've been spreading cow manure on. And some people may think that sounds stinky or bad, but that topsoil is sort of a national treasure.
It's got to be some of the richest soil around.
Oh, yeah. So it's, you know, 12 inches of topsoil up there. And I think that, you know, so often you hear about these farms being purchased and they say, you know, there's a strip mall on it or something. It's just criminal. I think that we really need to really value things in different ways. I mean, it's not how much money you can get by putting in a housing development per square foot or something, or it has value because you're going to put condominiums on it or something like that. The value also is, you know, that soil. I mean, how do you value that type of topsoil? I mean, is it $1 million an acre?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and so when you have to just stop being materialistic about it and think about, like, how can we protect these historic sites and keep them remaining as farms?
If you have any gardening questions, you can give us a call at 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And let's talk to Linda in Northside. Hi, Linda.
Hello. How are you doing today?
Good. Thank you. Go right ahead.
Thank you. Well, where I live, you know, all the houses are very close together, and there's only a small front yard usually that's open for planting. Back areas are always pretty wooded. And a couple of neighbors planted patches of food in between their lawn, you know, strips of lawn. And they had great harvests. And that set a precedent, and I started doing it. And I was just, and it just made me think that if everyone planted a little food, you know, even between grass paths for lawn lovers, and fruit trees, that we become less dependent on stores and probably more healthy because and the flavors of food, you know, just growing around us. And it almost seems blasphemous that we don't plant food, you know, right outside in the fertile soil we're blessed with, because people on the other side of the world couldn't do that if they wanted to, you know. And the food closer to Mother Nature is such a disease-fighting element that it has the elements we need to, you know, regenerate for our bodies to be healthy, regenerate the new blood and tissue and bones and organs. And as long as it's not dissected out, you know, it keeps its nourishment. I mean, it's a win-win.
Hey, Linda, you said everyone shared. Are you still doing that? Is there still that?
Yes.
Okay.
You know, one little tomato plant seems to give tons of fruit, and people are, and the children get to see the food develop, come right out of the earth, you know, and the earth can be replenished too with the scraps. But it's definitely,
definitely worth doing, isn't it? Yeah, definitely something that's worthwhile. Yeah. Linda, thank you so much for the call. We appreciate it.
Yeah, I think farming your yard is a really great idea, and particularly if you live in a residential area, neighborhood, sometimes your only sunny spot is the front yard. And people may be hesitant to put in row crops. But you can do things with edible landscaping. I've been experimenting the last several years with gooseberries and currants. And Red Lake currant's a good one, and Pixwell gooseberry is a good one. And they can make nice ornamental shrubs. Also, a friend of mine who's a horticulturist gave me some suckers from some Nanking cherry, which is like a bushy hedge, and that creates a sort of like a tart pie cherry that's very edible. And those are good options, I think. So when you're designing your ornamental yard, you know, you can be also edible.
As she said, sometimes the front yard is all you've got, and you know, you have to take advantage of that. And obviously, you know, if she has woods in the back, you've got to go where the majority of all of our plants that are edible like full sun and need full sun. So you've got to find a spot for that.
And it's also important, too, to invite our beneficial insects into our landscape. And one way to do that is they need a food source as well. So, like, planting our sunflowers and zinnias and other ornamental plants, most of which are annuals. Butterfly bush, which is a perennial, you can plant that in to, again, invite and create that habitat for our beneficial insects so it can reduce and possibly even alleviate any use of organic or synthetic pesticides.
Now let's talk to Joseph in Claremont County. I think that's something he wanted to touch on too. Hi, Joseph.
Hello. I'm in the flat part of Claremont County, and I've been cultivating about 40 feet of thornless blackberry bushes. I guess this has been about 6 years, trying to expand what I can, but there's been a tremendous problem. We have Japanese beetles around here, and about 2 years ago, they stripped almost every branch that I had of anything that was edible. So to try to grow something organic and then try to keep the insects off of it is a real problem. So I actually ended up hanging lures and traps onto the plants themselves this year and had a pretty good success at it. I probably caught maybe 10 bags of 5,000 beetles per bag, so we were 50,000 beetles removed. But how do I get that match between organic and then getting wiped out? Sometimes I hear people say, well, don't trap the beetles at all. You know, and it's like, well, wait a minute here. I would have nothing left. So where is that happy medium? And put it this way, where is science when I need it, when I'm saying no pesticides, but then if I don't use pesticides or lures, then I get wiped out, as we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. Where's the medium? And where's the science to help me out?
You've got a kind of a multitude of issues. One of them is when your blackberries are ripening, that is when they're going to be most attractive to Japanese beetles. They pick up that smell, and they will just attack with vengeance. And the other thing is, of course, is when they're ripening is when you least want to be putting on any kind of spray. So you've got to find something that you can do. We have always recommended, as far as Japanese beetle traps, is to give your neighbors those traps and let them put them in their yards and take all the Japanese beetles from your yard into theirs. Whether that's very effective or not, I don't know. You're going to have problems. One of the things that you can do is harvest every day. Do not let any of that fruit ripen out there or get overripe out there. Get to it immediately. And I'm not positive about any of the organic sprays that you can apply to those that will get the Japanese beetles. And obviously, you have to be extremely careful because you don't want any of that residue on the fruit, be it organic or synthetic.
Is there kind of a beneficial insect that would help in this situation?
Not that I am aware of. What I was also going to mention, too, is that, you know, when you are, it be organic or not organic, if you're using these pheromone traps, for example, they are attracting the males. So the females are still out there. And what are the females doing? They are then laying the eggs, it be in your yard, your neighbor's yard. So just because you're attracting the males to these lures or these pheromone traps doesn't necessarily mean the population for future generations are going to decrease. So just keep that in mind as well. We do have spray guides for organic and synthetic users. So if you need that information, reach out and I can send that to you electronically or via email, or excuse me, or in the mail. But yeah, it's very important to know that. And David or Peter, I don't know if row covers will, because they are coming out of the ground. That's how, you know, so that, and this is a perennial crop, so you can't practice crop rotation. So, you know, even putting row covers, I don't even think is going to alleviate that.
The Japanese beetle adults are what are feeding. So they would be flying in, and row covers could be very beneficial in that. Now, you're not going to get, you know, if they're emerging from the ground, but for the most part, you're going to get a lot of help with the row covers. It's just that if I think he was, did he say thorny blackberries, which mean you got to put the row cover on, take it off, and that's going to be kind of tough.
So you might have to build some type of trellis that, and understanding when that life cycle of the Japanese beetle is at prime, that's again where science and extension can give you those resources to know when their threshold is at the highest.
One thing, too, I really want to piggyback on what Dave said about, you know, regularly harvesting. You need to harvest at least every other day. At Home at a Song Farm, my wife manages our blackberries, and they pick every other day at least. And you do not leave decomposing or overripe fruit on there. Also, you really need to cut out your dead canes, kind of remove and then remulch underneath to kind of keep things clean. Also, you know, monitor your soil conditions and feed them with compost, because if the plant's healthier, it'll be more resistant to different diseases, and also, you know, can stand some pressure from the pest.
We will continue our gardening conversation. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. My guest this afternoon, Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stolz, co-owner of Home at a Song Farm and director of the Community Garden Program at Turner Farm, Peter Huttinger, and Boone County Cooperative Extension Agent David Kester. You can join us with your gardening questions at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. We got an email from Nancy in Erlanger, and she has a question about poinsettias. She says she hears every year about those being poisonous, and she has a family visiting with a cat. So she is wondering if she should be concerned about this.
There was an Ohio State greenhouse specialist who went on TV many years ago, and he ate a salad of poinsettia leaves and did not you know, succumb to it. They're not good for you. You should not eat them. But they're not. They've been kind of overrated.
They don't taste too good from what I've heard. Yeah,
they're not. But they're not as deadly as we've been told. But you know, you shouldn't be ingesting any of those kind of things. And I would avoid it. I try to limit the access the cat has to it, and just make sure that you keep it away from kids.
Anybody got any advice for taking care of a poinsettia? Oh. Getting mild.
They're very what I call high maintenance plants, yeah. Especially if you want to keep it for next year. And if that's the case, you know, they have to be in, you know, darkness for X amount of time. So I don't have that all in my brain at this moment. So if you need those guidelines, I'm happy to send that to you. So feel free to reach out to Extension. And, you know, this lady here is from Kenton County. You have an agent there in Kenton County. So, you know, I'm happy to help you. But, you know, I say, you know, they're $5 to $7. I'd rather a farmer grow it for me every year and then just buy a new one.
Just put that on your compost pile in January and be done with it. We have some wonderful greenhouses and garden centers that'll be more than happy to sell you a new one next year.
513-419-7100. Let's talk with Tracy, who's in Brown County. Hi, Tracy.
Hello.
Go right ahead. You're on.
Hello. My comment was for the gentleman that was growing the thornless blackberry and having a problem with the Japanese beetles. I only get them for like a week and a half out of the year, and that's it. And what I discovered that eats them is they're called a wheel bug, and it's a large assassin bug. And I almost killed one once, and then I saw him the next day. He was sitting in a gladiola and was eating one, so now they are my best friend.
So you said that's a good bug to keep around.
Yeah, that's a beneficial. They're scavengers on the ground, so they like other insects.
You know, it's really amazing how small a number of problematic insects we have. The majority of them are good or really have no effect whatsoever. So anything that we can do to keep those predators and those types of insects around. And the unfortunate thing is that when we start to rely on insecticides, we're killing those as well as our target pest. And sometimes we're having more effective use of the pesticide on the beneficial ones. So you really need to identify the pest and really target them when they're the most vulnerable.
Can you buy wheel bugs and then just introduce them into your garden?
Yeah, there are some garden stores, and then there's also an entomologist who is based out in Louisville that I know is the only one in Kentucky. So she does have beneficial insects. And I'll be glad to give you that contact information. But what I also wanted to say, too, is, you know, Japanese beetles, for example, or any beetle or disease for that matter, is you have to understand their life cycle. So Japanese beetles in particular, they are very active during the day. In the morning, the dew, they're kind of like ready, you know, they're not awake yet. So if you have, if your acreage is small or garden is small, have a bucket of soapy water and just put, and the Japanese beetles are always in clusters typically. And so just put those Japanese beetles right in the bucket of water, and you're not spraying any pesticide, it be organic or non-organic. Because as David said, even the organic, you know, can have some negative consequences, especially on our beneficial insects. So, you know, just keep that in mind too. You don't always have to use chemicals.
And also, I think when we talk about having pollinator gardens to attract your pollinators, I mean, the plant debris and those plants also act as hosts for different types of insects also. I think the bronze fennel is supposed to be, you know, popular for praying mantis. Mm-hmm. In permaculture, they are big advocates of using comfrey and allowing it to die back. And when the leaves hit the ground and kind of die and make like a mat, that's supposed to be a nice habitat for beneficial insects. But it is interesting, like the tomato hornbug. I think for every you know, 10 I see, 9 of them have parasitic wasps hanging off of them. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of interesting. I mean, and I didn't release the parasitic moth.
No.
And so it's interesting. Some of this stuff sort of seems to self-regulate because you remember these predator insects, you know, they want to eat. So they're going to go out in the same way that your Japanese beetle is going to go looking for your blackberries. There's, you know, the wheel bugger is going to start coming looking for the Japanese beetle.
And sometimes, you know, I keep it for a demonstration and educational component. Unfortunately, I've had some issues with some aphids in the garden, and I leave it there with aphids infested in hopes that the ladybugs will come. And my goodness, it's like they send out this party invitation, and here comes the ladybugs. And then the kids in particular, and even the men that I work with, the inmates, they're like, look at all these ladybugs, you know. And it's very interesting to see that relationship. And then along comes the ants. And, you know, and then we start talking about why all these different insects are in the garden and how we can get rid of it. But if we get rid of it, what's the negative of that? So it's this whole relationship and conversations that are just out of insects.
513-419-7100. And let's go to Elizabeth in Beaver Creek. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Thank you very much for taking my call. So I have a big problem. I have all of these grand ideas for the garden that I would ideally like to produce, but I kill literally everything that I put in the ground.
Oh, you don't have a green thumb. Okay.
No, and I don't really have any, you know, friends or family that grow gardens. So I'm kind of stuck for where to even get started. I have about a third of an acre of, you know, good side yard that I, you know, gets lots of sun, east facing, not much shade, that I would love to start doing something with, and I don't even know where to get started.
Where are you located?
Greene County, Ohio.
Okay. I would really start with your, I know that Greene County must have an extension service. I would sure start there. I think you can get a lot of help there. I would maybe enlist some neighbors who are gardeners and get them. You can also, one of the things that I think would be real beneficial is start off with a soil sample of the site where you're going to grow and take that. And they can kind of tell you how much nutrient needs that you might have to apply. And then, you know, one of the things that we all agree upon is the addition of organic matter, and start to collect some leaves and add that to your soil on a regular basis every fall. Work that in. You'll never be satisfied with the condition your soil is in. And honestly, if you can get your soil with a high organic content, I think you'll be amazed at what you can grow.
Okay. So your suggestion would be start with some composting. I certainly have a spot in my yard that, I can start doing that. I really haven't done anything like that before. Is it worth going to, you know, sometimes, you know, like the big box stores, your Lowe's or Home Depot, and even some of our, we've got some really wonderful local gardening centers up here. I don't know that they offer, kind of like your how-to classes. You know, is that something that would be beneficial?
I think it would be really beneficial. And again, look up Greene County Extension Service in your phone book or just Google it, and you will be in contact with them. They will have a lot of garden programs coming up in January, February, March. There could be some nearby counties that have those as well. And I think that is a great way to start, and they will be very familiar with your soil type, the conditions in your area, and, you know, you may even be able to get one of them to come out and take a look at your site and tell you how to where to start.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's also okay with education. If you go to your extension agent or if you go to a nonprofit gardening organization, you know, they're not invested in selling you a product. And so you'll get a wider spectrum of alternatives. Also, you know, start off small and don't overplant. People really have a tendency to not do proper plant spacing, and that's where you can really get into a lot of trouble with disease. And even though you're planting fewer plants, you'll often increase your yield. And, you know, back on your little seed packet, they give the proper spacing. And UK Extension has a wonderful home and gardening guide that you can get online or order from them. I really encourage that.
That's what I was going to say, Peter. And also call some of your seed catalogs, because a lot of them will send them to you for free. And you really learn a lot about plants maybe you've never even heard about. But also just answering some of your basic questions of when to plant, how to plant, and, you know, different variety selections. So, start with education. And this winter, you know, is a good time to do that.
Let's talk to Judy in Florence. Hi, Judy.
Hi. I have a question that isn't really weather appropriate, but a few years ago I had gone to the Florence Farmers Market and purchased a watermelon. It was supposed to be a heritage watermelon. I think it was called maybe Moon and Stars or something.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
Yep.
Okay. It was delicious, and so I saved some of the seeds. And then the next year, I planted them in a starter atmosphere, and none of them came up. So what was I doing wrong?
Peter, Moon and Stars is a heirloom, and
yes,
it should have bred true. The only thing is maybe the seeds weren't mature enough, but that shouldn't have been, because that they would mature when the melon was ripe. Moon and Stars is a very easy one to find, however. I mean, you can order that one. Why it didn't breed true or that you didn't, I can't really tell you, but you can certainly get seed packages of Moon and Stars.
Yeah, and with saving seeds, some things like, say, tomato seeds need to be fermented a little bit before they're dried and saved. And there's some tricks, like cucumbers in particular. I know you want to let them grow until they actually become yellow before the plant needs to kind of go through a certain maturation process. But there's a seed company called Fedco, F-E-D-C-O. It's a nonprofit. And they, if you go to their website, they have a downloadable little pamphlet on, it's more of a booklet on seed saving that's extremely thorough. You might want to take a look at that.
Let's talk to Brian in Mount Adams. Hi, Brian.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm interested in local food. I'm a member of the Green Umbrella, and we're learning more about buy locally. And I've been trying to find pawpaws, and I'm having a hard time finding those. And someone said you should just grow them in your backyard. How difficult is it to grow the pawpaw in an urban environment?
Well, it's not difficult, but it takes a long time for the trees. We have trees that are 8 years old, no, 7 years old, and this year we're just getting a few pieces of fruit off them. So it's slow to go, but they're an easy tree to grow.
Make sure you get one of the newer or one that is known to produce quality fruit. Some of the ones that you get in the wild are not as tasty as the ones that you can get a named variety. Kentucky State University in Frankfort is a large repository for every pawpaw, and they have actually released some varieties that have excellent flavor.
Does he need two of those to pollinate?
He does. He does.
And so actually KSU, they have a wonderful website that also has information of where you can purchase these named pawpaws. So very important to get those, and then also information on similar to that of planting apples, which ones you need to pair together. So if you need any help with that, let us know.
And they do colonize, so you create a grove that way. And another thing to remember is some cultivars particularly are more suited for full sun and some others. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things is we think of this as a border plant, a forest plant, which they will, that they do fine that way. But if you plant them in full sun, they'll actually, some varieties will mature and bear fruit and be more productive in full sun.
And it's actually, they have those large seeds. So that too, you can keep those seeds, and they're actually pretty easy to germinate, though they do need that cool spell in the refrigerator. And then once you do that, they'll germinate fairly quickly, but again, you're starting a tree from a seed. But it's a great learning process.
Peter, Sarah, and David, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stolz, co-owner of Home Meadow Song Farm and director of the Community Garden Program at Turner Farm, Peter Huttinger, and Boone County Cooperative Extension Agent David Kester. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition. You can find archives of our programs at WVXU.org. Pete Reitmeier was the producer for today's show with help from Kevin Reynolds. Belinda Kai was the assistant producer. Dave Shermer was the technical director. I'm Mark Haney. Cincinnati Edition is going to take a break for the holidays. We'll be back on January 2nd. Meantime, lots of great holiday programs will be airing weekdays at 1 o'clock on 91.7 WVXU. So please enjoy those.
Holidays, it's easy to lose sight of what it is we're celebrating.
One of the most important things I can do while I'm on this planet is honor those I love through celebrations.
I'm Lynn Neary. Join me for Tinsel Tales 2, stories that bring the holiday season into focus in a Christmas program from NPR.
Thursday afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.